Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
The ugliest story of the day yesterday. Ugly because it is so utterly predictable and so utterly disappointing. Andy Hobbs, who is a dear friend, has been a friend for a long time. I know him and his wife and have met his kids. And, you know, like, he's a chief deputy at the sheriff's office. Okay. You know, he might be the sheriff one day. Okay. Great guy. Right. We've had him on the show many times. Okay. He does a lot in the community, and most recently, he got appointed to the PSC board to be on the board of trustees for the Pensacola State College. Good. Wonderful. Fantastic. And then we learn, I think Rick Outson had broken the story, good for him, that he's no longer going to be on the board. That somebody in Tallahassee has pulled his nomination from consideration, even though he had already passed the two committees. Ethics and elections on the one hand and higher education on the other. Senator Gates is ethics and elections. And he was getting ready for a House vote or a Senate vote, and somebody pulled it. And essentially, he found out about this when he was during a PSC Foundation fundraiser meeting. When it was all over, Ed Meadows, the president of PSC, comes up to him and says, you know, hey, you know what's going on in Tally? He's like, no, I've been here working on this stuff. He says, the governor's office has pulled your appointment, blocked it from PSC Board of Trustees. And you say, for what possible reason? Well, here's the theory, okay? Remember, PSC is one of the two boards that the governor has stuck his dirty little fingers into and tried to manipulate his way. Both boards have Zach Smith on them. People that run afoul of Zach Smith, you know, maybe things happen, okay? So he's had some conflict with Zach Smith. I think, you know, the Ruthie Christie Noel stuff, remember how Zach Smith went after her super inappropriately, another fantastic human being in our community that for whatever reason doesn't please little old Zach Smith, because at one time she did her job by showing up on WSRE and talking about DEI stuff just cause. So no, she got to go. It's just amazing. So, back a couple of months ago when they were going through the whole business with WSRE and getting rid of PBS at PSC, Andy Hobbs, a conservative who also believes in the value of PBS, said,
I didn't have, the only channel I had was Channel 3 and PBS when I lived off a trailer park and off Pine Forest Road. That's all I had. I didn't have the luxury of having a satellite dish. I didn't have those luxuries. And I think I turned out okay. Now, of course, my mom did a great job and things like that. But I understand the pressure that you're under, that everybody else is under. I just want to make sure that we are making the right decision for the college in particular.
We want to make sure we're making the right decision for the college and, of course, for the community, because PBS is a public service. That's the whole idea of it, right? Now, whatever the money, whatever the concerns about content and programming, Andy Hobbs' experience, I think a lot of people's experience was PBS was very helpful to us growing up. Does that mean it should be publicly funded? Different question, okay? But he's a fan. He grew up on it. He learned things from it in his circumstances.
I have to say thank you to WSRE Foundation. I have close friends that are on the foundation. They do an amazing job every day. Jill Hubbs does an amazing job for our community every single day, and I appreciate her. I just have to voice those concerns because I feel like I owe to be a person of my word and speak to the people who came. So that's why I'm bringing up my concerns.
And, of course, they voted to get rid of it, to sever that tie. There's been dust up over the funding from the foundation, which was supposed to go to this, and now what happens with that money, and there's a lot of contention over that. So that's one possibility. The other one would be the vote for Ed Meadows' bonus for work already done above and beyond and for a raise, which, if I remember correctly, I might be wrong about this, but I'm pretty sure that was one of the other things that Zach Smith opposed because he's been in the effort to try to, my opinion, unseat Ed Meadows. He's been challenging him just like he led the charge against Martha Saunders. So here's my theory. Zach Smith and DeSantis, because of Zach Smith, decided, and maybe the commissioner for the Board of Governors, because he had a conversation, the replacement for Manny Diaz, when Manny Diaz came here to be the UWF president, his successor, Anastasios, or Stasi Kamoutsas, I don't know how to say it, Kamoutsas, excuse me, he had a talk with Andy after the PBS thing. He was letting me know that he was displeased with my support for PBS. It was not cordial, he says. That's why you remove somebody from the board for voting his conscience, for trying to serve the community. I have been, you know this, I have been a supporter of Governor DeSantis since before he was the governor. I did not, you know, I thought actually Adam Putnam was going to be the governor. And then Trump endorsed DeSantis, and DeSantis crushed Adam Putnam in the primary. And from that point on, I mean, he seemed like a great candidate. He did fantastic things during COVID. He has fallen off of his rocker lately. Petty personal politics, some of his statements, actions. It's gotten really bad. And certainly the Uthmeyer stuff has been a big part of that. But the cover-ups, the incompetency, the failure to appoint people to boards, to fill boards. We were just hearing from the Scambia Children's Trust yesterday how they haven't filled those appointments, and they've been sitting on a desk for months and months and months. Pattern we've seen again and again in Escambia County Commission and the ECUA board and other boards as well. This is just ridiculous. Andy Hobbs is a fantastic person to be on that board. And the fact that some combination of the Board of Governor, or sorry, Secretary of Education, and Zach Smith and the governor would withdraw him, remove him without even letting him serve a full term is inexcusable. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
That's right. No accidents to report to you right now, nor delays. Everything is flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
When you were 18, you spent your spring break in Cancun. The party was legendary, and you speak of it often, even though you don't remember half of it. The geeky kid who sat across from you in math class stayed home, practicing calculus. You made fun of her. A lot. That is, until last year, when you owed the IRS a lot of money and called the certified public accountants at Benakis & Associates. And she answered the phone. Who's laughing now? The number crunchers at Benakis & Associates live and breathe accounting and tax preparation. It's practically in their DNA. When you need to know what the heck a Form 656-PPV is, call Benakis & Associates. When you need a QuickBooks Pro advisor, call Benakis & Associates. When you need someone who practices long division for fun, call Benakis & Associates. Now in the historic district on 120 South Alkanes and online at flacpas.com. Benakis & Associates. Leave the numbers to the experts.
Managing your ECUA service is easier. The new My ECUA mobile app puts everything you need right at your fingertips. From paying your bill, submitting service requests, and reporting issues like missed collections, damaged or lost bins, water main breaks, and sewer overflows, it's all right there in one easy-to-use app. Take control of your services anytime, anywhere. So download My ECUA. It's available in the App Store and Google Play.
As a small business owner, what keeps you up at night? Just knowing if your email got hacked or your phone system went down, it could cost you thousands in revenue, as well as your reputation. That's where Data Revolution comes in, with their unique position to take care of you and your business IT support, phone systems, cybersecurity, and more. Secure it and sleep better at night by going to datarevs.com. Winner of the 2021 Best of the Bay for IT support, datarevs.com.
News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 is accepting applications for employment. Periodically, we have openings in sales, business, news, promotions, engineering, production, and programming. We'll keep your application for consideration when such an opening occurs. We also provide internships for qualified students. Apply online at News Radio 92.3 or at our studios at 7251 Plantation Road between 8:30 AM and 5:30 PM. ADX Communications is an equal opportunity employer.
The Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay, weekdays 5 to 9 on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Informative, local, dependable.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for Timothy Chalamet, who recently insulted the art forms of opera and ballet during a town hall with Matthew McConaughey.
And I don't want to be working in ballet or opera or, you know, things where it's like, hey, keep this thing alive, even though no one cares about this anymore. All respect to the ballet and opera people out there. I just lost 14 cents in viewership.
So dismissive and contemptuous. Now look, we of course recognize that traditionally ballet and opera have been cultural tools of the one percenters, and as such, we cannot invest ourselves heavily in defending them. Occupy the Opera House isn't even one of our top 100 protest chants. However, as people who do not believe in trampling the dreams of anyone, especially dancers and singers, we find this to be a tone harshness transgression level 3.5, and Chalamet must be punished. As Woketopian Emeritus Whoopi Goldberg said...
And
when you crap on somebody else's art form,
yeah.
It doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel good to see.
And that's the point. It's not about the fact of whether these arts are thriving or struggling. The point is that Chalamet hurt people's feelings, and he needs to be punished for doing so. However, he did not do the worst thing in this particular incident. No, the real transgression was committed by rapper-influencer Doja Cat, who began at first by criticizing Chalamet and pretty acerbically.
Hey, by the way, opera is 400 years old. Ballet is 500 years old. There is an etiquette around opera. There is etiquette around ballet. It's amazing. It's an amazing theater medium. It's f-ing beautiful.
That was perfect, delivering the sort of anti-white, anti-male comeuppance that only someone as classy and dignified as Doja Cat in all her F-bomb erudition can perform. The problem wasn't her initial criticism. The problem is what came next. For on the following day, she deleted her original TikTok and then posted a follow-up video in which she admitted that not only had she never been to the opera or the ballet, but that she didn't really know anything about them. And that she was really only posting the TikTok to virtue signal against Chalamet and to make herself feel good by pretending to be on the right side of a cancellation movement on social media.
But what I was doing yesterday was virtue signaling because I wanted to connect. And I knew that Timothy's goof up was something that I could leverage. It's like I wanted to be sincere in a moment, and that was the perfect material for me to seem sincere. But the truth is I don't know anything about opera. I don't know anything about ballet, and I've never been to either shows.
No, 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 no! This will not do! The absolute worst thing anyone can do isn't to say a mean thing like Chalamet did. The worst thing anyone can do is to expose the real narcissism behind canceling itself and then apologize for doing the very ritual which is the central sacrament of our movement. Virtue signaling as part of a groupthink expression of collective outrage against a person, preferably male and white, who says something mean so that we can feel good about ourselves and our moral superiority. No, Doja Cat, it is mildly misguided for you to reverse course in your criticism, but it is absolutely heretical for you to talk about the holy act of cancellation as if it could ever be a mistaken expression of ignorance and insecurity, seeking social approval through unjustified expressions of outrage while pretending to be an expert on anything you express your outrage over. How dare you? So for this, Timothy Chalamet has received a level 2 cancellation, suspended for good looks, but Doja Cat is being given a level 5 cancellation. I know, to be enforced immediately across all social platforms, the tribe of pretentious bourgeoisie arts aficionados posers has spoken. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, we want to take just a moment to praise Dr. Kaya Oakes, a professor of writing at UC Berkeley, for her wonderful meditation on Lent from the perspective of a certified wokist, Three Oregano Leaves. Now, ordinarily, I wouldn't do this, but just because Kaya herself chose to include the president's actual name in the title of her essay, and since she is a highly esteemed professor of writing, not creative writing, mind you, just writing, we will honor her decision by saying his name just one time. Gird yourselves for the trauma this will cause. The name of her essay is What Lent Asks of Christians Rethinking Trump. Okay. Is everyone all right after hearing the unmentionable one's name? I'm sorry we had to do that. Anyhow, the basic premise of her article is that the time of reflection and self-examination which Lent calls for shouldn't only be used to avoid certain foods like meat or to give up coffee or chocolate or whatever passes for a Lenten sacrifice these days. It also shouldn't only be used to give up sinful activities such as driving a non-electric vehicle, eating food that has a face, or watching Taylor Sheridan shows. She says the real work of Lenten repentance is for all those who have supported this presidential regime to rethink their life choices and turn away from that most serious of sins and throw themselves on the mercy of Mother Gaia. Yes, leave MAGA for Mogaia. As she notes, Lent offers a specific window for Christians to consider what it means to atone for beliefs and actions that have damaged other people. Those beliefs and actions can include voting choices that empower candidates who do damage. In other words, repenting from participating in the material evil of MAGA is the only way for the faithful to purify themselves for Easter. Now, apart from the premise here that Christianity is in any way a true, valid, or legitimate religious system, which it most certainly is not, we love this admonition because it does the one thing that must always be done to advance our own religion of wokeism: make everything about politics and make politics about everything. As von Habermeyer's fifth postulate on purifying the chi teaches us, our lives only matter insofar as we devote them to the evangelism of our political movement by any means necessary. Salvation through political victory, which means that shame, anger, and joy are all mere tools toward the grand end of political domination. So here we have a genuine expert on matters of theology, ontology, and ethics, a professor of writing at Berkeley, taking something that people might otherwise think has nothing to do with politics, Lent, and converting it into its truest self, a holy period of partisanship. So well done, Dr. Oakes, and thank you for reminding us that totalistic systems like ours totally depend on the totality of everything being totally about politics all the time. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, this week's Birkenstock of Justice, Inclusion, and Love Award goes to the organizers of the Los Angeles Marathon. Now, obviously, a lot of attention's been given to the finish of the race, but there's a much that's much less important than the beautiful and kind decision that was made by the organizers in anticipation of the high heat expected on race day. The McCourt Foundation announced that the race would feature not one, but two finish lines, one at the traditional 26.2-mile mark, the literal definition of a marathon, and one at the 18-mile mark, an accommodation for people who might be struggling to run the full 26 miles due to the heat. Toward the end of the race route, full-length competitors would continue on, take a U-turn, and run back along the same path to the finish line, but anyone who felt the heat was getting the better of them could turn left early and complete an 18-mile route, and of course, be granted a medallion for completing the race just like everyone else. No one was to be penalized for quitting early, shortened distance, but full honors. As the organizers said, if you're having a tough day and want to end your race before the 26-mile mark, you can choose to turn at mile 18 and head to the finish line early. There is no shame in making a smart decision for your body. You will still receive your finisher medal and any challenge medal you've earned. Well, you can guess the rest. Some of the harshest bullies on social media tried to say this is somehow a violation of the basic idea of having a marathon, since 18 miles isn't one. District GOP Chair Lisa Cusack wrote, "People who don't finish the marathon can now identify as people who do finish the marathon." Another keyboard warrior added, "Next thing you know, they're going to talk about how brave the people that stop at 18 miles are compared to those who finish, because it takes a big person to quit and embrace that emotional and mental strain of recognizing when you need to quit." Mockery is not truth. But that's exactly right. People who identify as marathon finishers are finishers indeed. Just look at the medallion they wear to prove it. And people who bravely know their own limits and quit early deserve credit for not pushing themselves to the brink of personal injury or death, as Pheidippides, the original marathon runner, did in bringing the news of victory over to the Persians, to his Athenian countrymen, promptly dying from exhaustion thereafter. It's just so sad and predictable that the anti-wokists of this world want to treat everyone equally instead of realizing that for some people, 18 miles is more of an accomplishment than 26 is for others. This ableism just saturates their thinking, as if standards and measurements and times and distances are objective facts that all people should share and not bend to individual need. But as the party who stands for affirmation and inclusion, who invented the participation medallion, we love what Los Angeles has done here. If only they'd gone farther. Instead of making people run a grueling 18 miles in the heat, they should have let each runner decide for themselves what a marathon meant to they. Should they run maybe 15 miles and identify as a completer? Some could run 3 miles, and according to that beautiful inner barometer of truth each man, woman, or other holds in their own heart, they could have been a marathon for them. Even 1,000 feet for some people might be a massive accomplishment, and that's the point. Instead of making people feel bad they didn't run an actual marathon, we should judge each person by their own set of guidelines and reward them accordingly. So whether someone runs 26 miles in the heat, 18 miles in the heat, or just 18 feet in a straight line indoors in the air conditioning of their own living room, everyone can be a winner because winning isn't just for winners anymore. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sisterin, and otherin, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.
John Pickens has traffic for us now. John?
The three oregano leaves?
Well, you got to give people their due.
I know. No accidents or delays to report to you this morning. Traffic is flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the five.
Completing isn't just for completers anymore. David Wayne is in the newsroom this morning, maybe with a headline or two for us. David?
Yeah, TSA workers are missing their first full paycheck today as the partial government shutdown drags on. The workers who screen passengers at America's airports are paid through the Department of Homeland Security. It's been shut down since last month.
Thanks so much, David. And just a reminder, if you're new to the show, every story in The Transgressors is true, just embellished a certain way, but the facts are true.
Fox News, I'm Gianna Gelosi. Four of the six crew members on board have been found dead after an American military refueling plane crashed in Iraq.
U.S. Central Command says the KC-135 aircraft was part of the operation against Iran, but the crash was not due to hostile fire or friendly fire. CENTCOM says two aircraft were involved. One landed safely, and the other went down in western Iraq.
Fox's Tom Rigotti, a Lebanese national armed with a rifle, accused of ramming his car into a synagogue in Michigan.
And according to the Dearborn Heights mayor, where that suspect lived, he lost several members of his family, including his niece and nephew, in an airstrike this weekend in Lebanon.
Fox's Madison Scarpino, a gunman opened fire at Old Dominion University, killing one and wounding two before being killed. Mohammed Jallo was a former Army National Guard member convicted in 2017 of providing material support for ISIS. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 6:31 at News Radio 92.3. Right now we've got 44 degrees. It is clear skies here across the area. This morning, we'll get to our forecast. Brooke Richardson and Channel 3 have that for us in just a few minutes. Governor DeSantis is blocking the reappointment of Escambia County Chief Deputy Andrew Hobbs to the Pensacola State College Board of Trustees. Hobbs had already cleared both the Senate and Ethics and Elections Committee and the Higher Education Committee on his way to a full floor confirmation vote. In a statement, Hobbs said he was disappointed by the governor's decision, but stands firmly by every vote and decision he made while serving. He was originally appointed to the board February of last year. Two people were taken to the hospital after a crash on South Blue Angel Parkway yesterday. FHP says a Toyota Camry crossed the median, making a left turn out of the Walmart service road, and struck a Hyundai Santa Fe near Sorrento Road at about 5:30 last night. Two men in the Hyundai, ages 40 and 71, were treated at the scene and then taken to a local hospital with minor injuries. Life Flight was called, but later canceled. Santa Rosa County can finally get effluent out of the Sound at Navarre Beach. Commissioners accepted the final donated utility easement on Tuesday for the Eglin Ribs Project. Commissioner Kerry Smith congratulated Commissioner Ray Eddington.
I just want to tell you, good job. Good job.
Edwin Henry donated the last link for the Navarre Beach component of the Ribs Effluent Project. County Administrator Brad Baker recommended the board accept the donation. The county had a groundbreaking several years ago, but needed the last piece to start running the rest of the pipe. Commissioner Eddington said he worked with staff members Michael and Tom on securing the easement. Commissioners approved it unanimously. The bodies of a Theodore mother and her two children were found buried in a wooded area in Somerdale in Baldwin County. Authorities identified the victims as 40-year-old Aurelia Chalk, her 17-year-old daughter Nyerka, and her 2-year-old son Anthony. All three were killed with an edged weapon wrapped in plastic and bedding and buried together. Hector Argueta Guerra, initially charged with kidnapping the family, now faces multiple counts of capital murder. Prosecutors say they plan to seek the death penalty. Mobile County Sheriff Paul Birch says Agueda Guerra is a suspected Serrano's gang member who'd been ordered deported but was released in 2021. The family had last been seen alive on January 30th. A bill heading to the governor's desk would temporarily restore HIV medication coverage for more than 11,000 Floridians who lost access at the beginning of March. The House passed a $31 million measure Thursday to fund the AIDS Drug Assistance Program through June 30th. Coverage had been cut after the Department of Health cited a $120 million shortfall caused by federal funding reductions. Pensacola Representative Alex Andrade was among the supporters pushing for the fix and for monthly accounting reports from the Department of Health on the program. The bill's a temporary measure. Legislators say permanent funding would be part of an ongoing budget negotiation. It's 6:35 at News Radio 92.3. And let's get a check on our traffic on the fives with John Pickens.
That's right. No accidents to report to you. Looks like I-10, I-110, Highway 29, 90, 98 all look good this morning. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thank you very much, John. Now our Channel 3 forecast.
Starting off cool today with temperatures this afternoon near 67 degrees, mostly sunny skies. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 53 degrees. For Saturday, sunny skies, high near 72. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 62 degrees. Going into Sunday, partly cloudy skies, 10% chance of a stray sprinkle, otherwise mostly sunny, high near 77. And Sunday night, temperatures dropping to 52. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
43, clear skies right now. Your next news at 7 a.m. Breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
I'm Dom Savino with Your Money Now. The Trump administration has launched another round of investigations into trade partners. Officials accuse dozens of countries of failing to crack down on forced labor. It comes a day after the top U.S. trade official started investigations into allies like Mexico and the European Union to probe alleged overproduction of products exported to the U.S. Microsoft's top executive overseeing its Office suite of products has announced his retirement after 35 years with the company. Under Rajesh Jha, Microsoft incorporated models from two startups and turned them into 365 Copilot, widely used in Microsoft's 365 commercial subscriptions. It's seen as a significant loss to Microsoft, which is trying to both collaborate and compete with AI developers Anthropic and OpenAI. On Wall Street, stock futures and oil prices are a little changed. For the moment, investors turn their focus from the U.S.-Iran war to key inflation data coming this morning. That's Your Money Now.
$5,000. That's the average amount of money people in the U.S. are now spending on gas in a year. $5,000. That's crazy. If you drive, you have to download Upside, the free app that gives you cash back every time you get gas. That's right. You can earn real cash back with Upside just by buying the gas you're already buying. You can literally start earning cash back today.
I use Upside every time I fill up, and I've already made around $200, $300.
You're putting gas in your car anyway. Why not get real cash back? If you like free money, download Upside.
I'm saving the cash I earn from using Upside to help pay for a vacation later this year.
Download the free Upside app now to earn cash back every time you buy gas. Use promo code SOUND to get an extra 25 cents per gallon on your first tank. You can cash out anytime right to your bank, PayPal, or a gift card for Amazon and other brands. Just download the free Upside app and use promo code SOUND for a 25 cents per gallon bonus on your first tank. That's code SOUND for a 25 cents per gallon bonus.
Selling a home is personal, and it can feel overwhelming before you even know where to start. A lot of homeowners are told that if they question the cost of selling, it means they are cutting corners or taking risks. That simply isn't true. Wanting clarity and fairness doesn't make you cheap, it makes you thoughtful. I'm Miriam Rogers with Poppy Properties. I offer a full-service listing for only 1%, saving you thousands. And my easy exit agreement means you're never locked into a relationship that isn't working. You still get professional marketing, photography, negotiation, and guidance from contract to closing. What you get less of is pressure. What you keep more of is your equity. This isn't about doing less. It's about doing what's right for you, your situation, and your future. If you're thinking about selling and want to start with information instead of obligation and learn more about my 1% listing model, visit my website at forsalebymiriam.com. That's forsalebymiriam.com.
Why is Bray Jewelers the best place to buy an engagement ring? Come in and see our selection. I promise you, we have more diamond engagement rings than you'll see anywhere in the panhandle of Florida. But it's what you do for people that they don't expect that they remember. The little things that we do, we want to deliver special experiences for you at Bray. We love doing what we do, and we love making people happy. We want every person that walks into the store to feel like you're part of our family. I want everybody to have an amazing experience at Bray Jewelers.
You don't stop needing information just because you left the car. That's why News Radio 92.3 goes with you. On your phone, on your computer, wherever you are. Stream us live or download the News Radio 92.3 app. Stay connected to local news, breaking updates, and conversations that matter, even when you're not near a radio.
And that's a good thing.
It's News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Informative.
Informative.
Local.
Local.
Dependable.
Dependable.
I hadn't planned on talking about my grandmother, but when I put the suit on, I realized this was the suit that I eulogized and buried my grandmother in a couple years ago. Before you say, "Ah," the reason I remember that this is the suit is because my daughter Jillian was 10 months old at the time, and right after eulogizing the greatest prayer warrior and patriot I've ever met, she threw up in the pocket of this suit. So this suit will always have some special memories for me.
And a special aroma. All right. Well, it's the last day of session, official session. So Alex Andrade, who is our state representative for District 2, or as I like to call him now, Representative Pocket Vomit. Alex, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Oh, I hope that doesn't stick, but good morning, Andrew.
You kind of hope it does, though, because it's an adorable story, right?
Well, thanks. No, there is such a thing as dry cleaning.
Obviously, we played your farewell speech, and I know it's an emotional thing. Just for people who did not hear the earlier when we talked about this on Wednesday, I guess it was, your parents drove up from Fort Myers vicinity 7 hours. Go ahead.
Yeah, Fort Lauderdale.
Fort Lauderdale, okay.
My mom's a teacher, and my dad has a small business down there. And they decided the day before just to drive 7 hours up, you know, spend 30 minutes, you know, watching me from the gallery and then, you know, hug my daughters and my wife and then drive 7 hours back. And so they walked in right before the speech. But in my defense, Andrew, the speaker yesterday gave his and started out the same way. Our class is, we've just been through a lot. I mean, none of us planned on going through COVID together,
yeah.
You know, as legislators, and we're all relatively young. You know, myself, the speaker, and Lawrence McClure, the appropriations chair. I mean, we all started this process without kids. We all have young kids now. Like it's just, you know, it's very emotional for all of us. Like we were all, you know, even the most stoic people in our class who said goodbye. Like I don't think there's a single person who hasn't gotten choked up during their speech. It's just I also had I spent 24 hours before that mentally preparing, you know, to like try and last as long as you could.
Right.
And then my parents got me. So
you know, it was unfair. So I'm going to say that your class is the blubbering Boehners. That's because
sure.
John Boehner very famously cried about everything all the time when he was in office. So and I've said this. I like it. I admire it. I respect it. It'd be me, too. I'd be doing the same thing, especially if my parents and all the stuff you've gone through with DeSantis and adversarialness with the House. I mean, all of it. It's been a little bit rough. We'll come back to that because I want to get your kind of final thoughts. I mean, you're not done because it's still a special session going on. But let's talk about things that are going on. First of all, budget is still not going to be done. I mean, it's not done. And so you're going to have to come back for a budget session, right?
Yeah. And in fact, since we are gaveling out of this session, you know, we're officially signing down. We're not going to do a hanky drop or anything, but like all bills that are in existence this morning will be dead by probably around noon today. So if not ratified by both chambers
in agreement on this, in the exact same language, right?
Yeah. So we'll essentially start from scratch. The only thing.
Wait, including the budget bills, like all the budget stuff also?
Yeah. I mean, like we'll obviously have those as a
starting
format,
template,
but we'll
have to
refile them. The only thing we agreed to as the House and the Senate was something Senator Gates put on the tax package, essentially deleting everything in our proposed tax packages and just saying we are going to decouple from the federal tax cuts that were part of the One Big Beautiful Bill, just because that would essentially be a $3 billion revenue loss to the state this year if we did the same tax cuts that were in the federal package.
Okay.
And we could not sustain that in our state budget. So that's the one thing the House and Senate agreed on related to the budget, was agreement that we will not piggyback off of the federal tax plan for this year. But everything else we're going to have to figure out.
So everything that didn't already get both chambers in total agreement by the time this happens is done. So, for example, the property tax referendum is dead unless you come back for a special session related to property tax, right?
Yeah.
Huh. How about that? We'll come back to Alex Andrade in just a second. Hang on for just a moment. By the way, that's not a how about that about the House. That's a how about that about the Senate and the governors. But we'll come back. John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
That's right. No accidents to report to you or delays. Everything is flowing smoothly so far this morning. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. By the way, I didn't play the substantial portions of your speech, Alex, the part where you talked about, you know, our system of government being one of the most beautiful, elegant ways to put selfish, short-minded, narrow-minded, sinful people in a room together and hammer out their differences in such a way that they all mutually thwart each other to the benefit of the population, which is it is a beautiful system to incentivize bad people to behave like they're good, because we're all sinners. You know, that's the premise. And I totally agree with you. In that regard, people often don't understand the bicameral legislative setup, that they get that a governor can veto, they get that a president can veto. They don't necessarily understand the both chambers having to pass the exact same bill. Can you just do the 30-second, here's how messages work, here's why they have to ratify the same bill or amend the same bill or strike all and substitute the other house's version? Can you just maybe walk through that for folks who don't understand it?
Yeah. So the House and the Senate were two separate bodies, obviously. And Andrew, you've done a great job previously describing the Senate kind of as like the restrictor plate and the House being more reactive to the populace. But we have to pass identical language for it to actually be a bill, one single bill that goes to the governor to either be vetoed or signed. So our process is, you know, while we have competing visions on the same topic, we have to come up with a vision that both chambers will agree to before we can send anything to the governor. So, yeah, like we've passed countless, you know, joint resolutions to put on the ballot, and a ton have passed the referendum process on the ballot for voters. But we have to both have identical language. So I think on the property tax, like the right to fish and hunt last election was one that we put on the ballot, the voters approved, but just last election. But with the property tax, we have to, both chambers have to agree. So what we sent the Senate already said they could not agree to, which was just a total elimination of all ad valorem property taxes other than the school property tax. And a requirement that firefighters and police don't have their budgets cut. We sent that to the Senate because that was a total elimination of property taxes other than the school portion. The Senate said, well, that's a little bit too aggressive for us, and already telegraphed that that's not as far as the Senate would like to go.
Yeah.
So whatever we ultimately get on property taxes will be whatever the Senate can stomach or the majority of senators can stomach, and that will ultimately be what goes on the ballot, I'm confident, in November.
Okay. And is there going to be a special session on property taxes? I know we got to come back for budget. Is there also going to be another one?
I think so, but I don't ultimately know. Like, DeSantis has been saying that he's going to come out with a plan for over a year. He still hasn't come out with a plan.
Right.
DeSantis says he's going to have a special session on property taxes. Maybe he doesn't keep his word on that either. I don't know, but I still am waiting for a plan from Governor DeSantis on what his proposal for property taxes will be, and maybe at some point it'll materialize. What I do know is there's a ton of the time frames that need to get met before it can actually be on the ballot in November. Like, we have to print ballots by September 9th, I think. And then there's, you know, a one-month challenge period that our HJRs have to go through before they can go on the ballot. So, September 9th, you know, I think it's, you know, 60 or 90 days before that that we have. So we're going to be cutting it close. If we don't have one in at least late April, early May, then I don't know if one happens. But, you know, we sent over as strong as we possibly could from the House, and now we just need, you know, the other chamber to agree to it. And at this point, we're going to have to be called back to do it. Either the legislature, we have to convene for a special, or Governor Sanchez has to issue a special call for it.
I was actually very surprised that, and I shouldn't have been, because Don Gates was carrying the Senate companion. I was stunned that the Senate did the Campus Guardians bill, the Michelle Salzman House bill that they did in the Senate. I mean, I love it. I love the idea, as a former college teacher, of being able to apply for and go through training and be allowed to carry on campus. I just was stunned that, because the Senate has always been the no on all of these gun reforms. And so that, to me, I thought that was amazing news. Last two things for you, at least for this particular day. One is, I have two things I want to ask you. I know we're going to talk to you again, because obviously you're going to still be a legislator during the special session whenever that happens. But one thing is, tell me something, or tell our listeners something about Tallahassee, the environment, the people, the culture. And it's just something that would surprise them that they don't know, particularly if it's a good thing. Okay, because I think a lot of times people perceive it a certain way. But tell me something, or tell us something about Tallahassee you learned in the last 8 years that maybe came as a big surprise to you.
I think people think that the big fights are similar to D.C. In that, like, you know, in D.C., Republicans and Democrats, they don't eat together. They don't communicate together. We have one member's, you know, dining room, and we all eat together. We get along professionally for the most part very well. Like, what people see on the floor in debates sometimes, and we had some heated debates. I mean, we had a very passionate issue on domestic terrorism yesterday, and we had a very passionate issue the day before on teachers unions and the Public Employees Relations Commission, like union certifications.
Yeah.
Where, you know, a few Republicans voted no, and Democrats were very extremely, you know, passionate about it.
Yeah.
But for the vast majority of it, you know, it's not a pure, like, spoils system like some folks think D.C. is, and it's far more collegial than it is up in D.C. Also, at the same time, I mean, the legislature, I mean, we're supposed to have full-time day jobs back home. It's supposed to be a part-time legislature. We don't get paid as much as people think. People are always shocked that that legislators make about $29,000 to do the job. So, you know, it is far more akin to what people think of when they want to describe what they want a perfect, ideal legislative system to be, in that, you know, we do work together. We have to make compromises and hear each other out. We, you know, have to go home. We generally do have day jobs outside of the process. It's far closer to what the founders, I think, intended than what D.C. looks like today.
You know, I heard Matt Gaetz talking about this one time several years ago when he was giving a speech over at PCC, if I remember correctly. And that's what he said. He said, you know, we sit Democrat, Republican in the lunchroom. We talk to each other. We're friends. We do stuff outside and we have drinks together. That's why it's different. It's just fundamentally different from how D.C. is set up. And I just think that's a beautiful thing, frankly. Last question for you. We've only got about a minute, but I did want to give you a chance to comment on the sudden withdrawal of Chief Deputy Andy Hobbs from being on the PSC Board of Trustees. I think it's absolutely outrageous. My only explanation is petty payback for a vote about PBS and or Zach Smith being at odds with him, neither of which is a good look. But your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's just petty about the PBS stuff. And it's nobody's fault but the governor's, right? The Senate, their role in confirmation is to confirm the people the governor wants. So when the governor rescinded his desire for Andy Hobbs to be on there, the Senate really, in that regard, their constitutional role was to say, okay, if you don't want us to consider it, we won't consider it. But, you know, as far as the governor doing that, he's dead wrong. I mean, Andy Hobbs is a perfect representation of our community. Everybody would say that he's like a stalwart in our community. He's a, you know, he's a great representative of Escambia County and Pensacola. And for DeSantis to disregard that all because Andy had the gall to say, hey, yeah, I think PBS programming is, at least the programming that we choose to air in Pensacola, is good. And we shouldn't throw the baby out with the bathwater kind of thing. Yeah. And not, you know, ascribe to all these big national silly, you know, virtue signaling culture war headlines. Andy was the adult in the room, and for that reason, DeSantis didn't want him there anymore, and that's a real shame. It's bad for Pensacola State College, and it's bad for our community.
I couldn't agree more. And you know, unfortunately, I hope that your endorsing an affirmation of Andy Hobbs doesn't hurt him in some way with the governor now, because, but you know, like you commented in your closing speech, like I don't want to affirm any legislators too strong.
We're gonna have a new governor in 8 months.
What's that?
We're gonna have a new governor in 8 months.
Yeah,
I think Andy will be just fine.
I certainly hope that is the case. Agreed. Alex Andrade, as always, thank you so much for the time. Thanks for the perspective, the service, and we'll obviously be talking to you again before you're out of office. But I really have appreciated over the years of session you joining me on Fridays to keep us updated and insider perspective on what's going on. And as you've heard me say, I'm sure before, I really appreciate that you give accurate, reliable information. I can always count on you to clarify things and know things, and I appreciate that as a guy who's always trying to relay the news to our audience. So thank you for that, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Andrew.
You bet. 655 News Radio 92.3, John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
That's right. No accidents or delays so far this morning. Everything is looking good. I'm not seeing anything to slow you down. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. If you are trying to sell your home or buy a home, or, you know, sometimes you're doing both, right? That's normal to move. Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty are really, really good at this. In fact, they're better at this in terms of numbers. They sell the most real estate, residential real estate of, you know, anybody in this region. 209 homes sold last year. That is 5 a week. That is a crazy, crazy number. I mean, that's just, 4 a week. That's a crazy number. And that produces experience and knowledge and what's the price and what's the market doing and what's the staging that people like and what kind of photographs do people like and what add-ons, what curb appeal, you know, just kind of every little detail they have figured out. They've got it down to a system, and that's why they move so many houses so effectively, even houses that other people, other realtors who, it's not that they're not capable, it's just that, you know, for whatever reason they can't make it happen. Those people come to Christina afterwards and she sells their house, you know, just kind of like that. 786-3996 for Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty.
The Leadership Pensacola Class of 2026, our community's premier leadership development program, is turning leadership into action.
Take a leap with us.
The Leadership Class of 2026 is stepping forward to create a healing garden for Gulf Coast Kids House.
A calming space designed to support children on their healing journey.
Together, we can turn leadership into lasting impact.
Lead with purpose and build healing.
To support this project, visit PensacolaChamber.com.
Join us in growing hope.
Tune in to Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, Sundays at 1 with Paul Roberts. Find out how their certified advisors can help you enjoy your retirement income. Financial security is about more than investments. Roberts Wealth can help you live your values and trust your future planning every step of the way. Don't miss Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, this Sunday at 1 p.m.
Investment advisory services offered by Foundations Investment Advisor Services, LLC, SEC. Registered advisors.
I move mountains for a living. Literally. That means I don't carry hand lotion, and when it comes to serious heartburn, I don't mess around with anything but Rolaids. Rolaids' dual-active formula has calcium carbonate and magnesium hydroxide that relieves heartburn fast. Yeah, you heard right. Two actives for that powerful relief. And the best part? The roll fits right here in my pocket, so I can get back to moving mountains.
Rolaids spells powerful relief. Read each label. Use as directed. Keep out of reach of children.
Something important happens.
You don't have time to wait.
Breaking news lives here.
Here.
On News Radio 92.3, 95.3 and AM 1620.
Are you close with your parents?
Well, they gave birth to me and yada, yada.
Yada what?
Yada, yada, yada.
Well, I'm standing in the city that never
sleep. It's the Bob Dylan you didn't know you needed this morning, right?
Some of these women, they just give me the creep.
Try to give you stuff you're not expecting sometimes. 6:59 on News Radio 92.3. David Wayne is in the newsroom with a headline or two for us. David?
Good morning, gentlemen. Four U.S. service members have died after a military refueling tanker crashed in western Iraq. U.S. Central Command confirming the deaths this morning. The aircraft was a KC-135 Strato tanker. It was taking part in Operation Epic Fury and crashed yesterday afternoon.
Yeah, there was another tanker that was involved in all that, and they have said it was not enemy fire. It wasn't friendly fire. It was something else. We don't know what happened, right? Weird incident.
Right, yeah. Not a lot of information
very
on
weird.
That. And a social media watchdog group says X may be breaching U.S. sanctions on Iran by allowing its new leader to open a verified account.
I thought Iran's internet's been out for like a week. How does he have internet?